Well, my question was kind of inspired by going to the Yellow Springs Library. There's a small bookshelf there that has all local authors. And I must have been 10 years ago when my kids were a lot smaller. And I saw all the local, and there was a lot by Arthur Morgan. And it was really then I had discovered him. I checked out some of the books, and read through them. And one of the things that I've always wondered is, what did his voice sound like? Because his writing is very formal and kind of a generational style of writing that's, very proper and everything. And so I always wondered if he sounded like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he did his old dispatches and stuff, like wartime dispatches, whether that. And I've always been impressed by his original thinking, so kind of wondered if he what he sounded like.
Well, we have with us two people who do know what he sounds like, even apart from the recordings that we have in the WYSO archives. We do have recordings of Morgan in the archives, and we're fortunate that we have several different types of recordings. We have some very formal addresses. We have a heartfelt address to the community during the civil rights unrest in Yellow Springs in the early 60s. We also have several informal interviews that he did, one with Mrs. Eleanor Price here in Yellow Springs, and another that is a little bit more formal and a little bit more cerebral, but still fairly casual, with a former Antioch professor of philosophy, Dick Meisler. We can play a little bit of those to illustrate some of the differences in his communication style. But I think I'd like to turn it over to John and Faith and have them talk a little bit about what their grandfather sounded like to them.
We can't decide who's to go first. It's interesting just hearing him on the radio just a minute ago. And I thought, oh, that was how he sounded when he was older. And the his voice wasn't quite as smooth, but it was definitely him. And I was wondering, I'm looking forward to hearing some of the younger and maybe less formal. We, John and I, grew up in town, just south of town, so we were around him and our grandmother Lucy, and heard them all the time. And I just never thought about what he sounded like. One of my favorite things was when he would stand up in friends' meeting, and which wasn't every week, but it would always be. It wouldn't be that same sort of formality, but there would be some sort of deep thinking that he was coming out with, which I was, and very clear and insightful. So I'm not. It was. I never thought of it as his words as being. I mean, you just when you're growing up with somebody, you just think that's the way they are. That's how they speak. He taught me how to raise raspberries and garden, and we just were together. I didn't even think about his voice, but most of it, like I say, I'd like to hear some of the younger how he sounded younger.
Well, the clip that you just played was a formal presentation about, and probably from around 1960 or late 50s. It was during I was in junior high when he was
1962.
right, and he was working on that campaign to save the Seneca Indian Reservation. And but so actually we didn't hear very many of his formal presentations. That's mostly what we heard was informal. But one of the things that I remember is, well, is his telling stories from the long past, and often with some humor. And there's one story that comes to my mind of, and I don't know where this came from, whether he knew it from personal experience, but it was of a pioneer woman whose husband was away on a trip. She had children, and she got bitten by a rattlesnake, and she was quite certain that she was going to die before her husband got back. So she got busy to bake bread as hard as she could so that her children would have enough food to eat before her husband got back. And she worked and worked and worked and worked at it, and then she didn't die. And I can still remember him telling that story with a twinkle of quite a different tone from the formal presentation.
Was his sense of humor as wry as it seems to come through occasionally in some of the things that I've heard?
It was definitely there. I don't know whether wry is the word I've used, but and another thing that is very clear in my memory from the years after I left home and would come back for visits is that he would always ask probing questions about what one was doing with one's life now. and he wanted to hear something useful and important. And so.
Was he born here?
He was born in Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay.
Though his father was born in Cincinnati, right. And actually, it's one of his funny stories is about how his father and uncle, was it, decided to move, and a spur of the moment, they were out
chopping wood or splitting wood.
And decided, wouldn't it be nice to be someplace else? And I don't remember the details, but they just...
it is a funny story.
And they said, shall we, how about next week? Shall we move next week? Oh, yeah. Why wait till next week? Maybe tomorrow. And then, why wait till tomorrow? And so then they said, well, shall we finish this wood? No, let's go right now. Isn't that the way it went?
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
They
went to Minnesota?
They went to Minnesota. Brothers went to Minnesota, and that's where that's where our great-grandfather lived.
So this is our great-grandfather we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
His name was John Morgan. Also.
Okay.
I haven't thought of that story for a long time.
What I think is interesting is that you think of this 19th century sort of persona, or this very formal persona, and Franklin Roosevelt comes to mind, who's a patrician Easterner.
Yeah.
And really, Arthur Morgan comes from almost a pioneer stock and from the upper Midwest. So from a very different, and again, you know, not with that Ivy League education or anything like that, but a real self-made intellect. And I think a lot of it was his curiosity. How do things work? How can you make things work better? You know, that drove a lot of what he did. But I think it's really interesting that formality, you know, when we hear it in our mind's ear, you know, our imagination, it's a lot different, you know.
I really did think I thought you guys came from the East Coast. I really did. I don't know why, but, you know, my grandparents were all, grew up with a lot of stories, and he was a very, not powerful, but a deep thinker and very original thinker. And I've always really interested because they do tell a lot of stories, mm-hmm. and there was all tons of stories. So it's interesting to hear your stories. Yeah. And
were your grandparents from the East Coast?
No, they were Toledo. German immigrants, you know, and they thought differently, and, you know, they were from the old country of Switzerland and had to reinvent themselves, and it's just really interesting, these people that were called on to do great things during that time. I really don't feel that, I don't feel like I've done a whole lot, but then you look at the whole breadth of his, Arthur Morgan's career, or I guess career life.
One fascinates me is his book, Nowhere Was Somewhere. Is that the title?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And about the Inca Empire. And his thesis was that that Sir Thomas More's Utopia was not actually a book about nowhere, but about the Inca Empire. But at that time, at the time More's book was published, the first Spanish explorers hadn't reached the Inca Empire. But he found that there was somebody who sailed on the ship with Americus Vespucci to South America and who hadn't gone back on the trip. And so Sir Arthur Morgan and R. Grant surmised that maybe he had traveled overland to the Inca Empire and then traveled on a balsa raft across the Pacific. And so he, part of the book is making the case that that was a possibility, and the other part of the book was analyzing the value of utopias in general. And then Thor Heyerdahl.
Yeah.
He made his first book was about his famous trip on the raft, and he sent a copy of the book to Arthur Morgan with an inscription that said, because Arthur Morgan's book was panned for the idea as being impossible, and some people said, balsa rafts will sink, and you couldn't. Anyway, so Thor Heyerdahl said, at least I've proved that your theory is possible.
Listening to him made me think of one of our uncles who's not related by blood, but both men, this was Landon Bowling, who was president of Earlham College for 15 years or so, and he's just turned 101, I think, this year. But both he and Arthur Morgan have sort of they've thought a lot. And I think even in the reading and what he's written and how he's written it, I was doing some interviews with Landrum a year ago, and I could, the words that are being used, the way they're using it, are coming out of sort of this whole history of the way they're thinking. And both of them, their voices are an older person's voice. It's interesting to hear.
One thing I might mention is that Arthur Morgan didn't marry our grandmother till he was in his 30s, and our father didn't marry our mother until he was in his 30s. So our earliest memories of him are when he was in his 60s or older. Mm. So we don't really have any memories of any earlier age.
I think that it would be a good time to shift a little bit and talk about Community Service Inc. and Community Solutions and how that deep thinking translates into a legacy of community activity. I mean, obviously, there was no senior citizens group in Yellow Springs in 1961, and with his efforts, there became one. And there, I think, are a number of small things that we sort of take for granted in our lives here in Yellow Springs, and actually in the Miami Valley. I mean, literally, people don't know that the reason that we have Five Rivers Metro Parks is because of his thinking of how do you maximize the use of this land and make it something that everyone can have access to and enjoy.
He was definitely somebody who loved nature. I mean, some of the early stories and reading about what he and our grandmother wrote about his early life, where he was off in nature, studying it, making lichen collections. And so that comes through in the work that he did, and like you say, how he thought of the Nature Conservancy in Dayton, in the Dayton area. And then, as John was saying, sort of the breadth of his thinking and his interest, it does show in Yellow Springs. I don't think about it. I don't think anybody very much in Yellow Springs thinks about all the different ways. And he was charismatic. He'd be traveling and he'd see somebody or meet somebody and he'd think, how could he get them to come to town and start a business or do what they were doing here? And so he helped that early sort of development of Yellow Springs into a vibrant, interesting sort of more, I don't know if I'd say cosmopolitan. It's different than the surrounding area. I hope nobody else in Dayton minds me saying that or seeing you, but it is. It has a different feel, and and the fighting schools consolidation when that happened. That was a big thing. And Community Solutions started, and you might know some more about this too, John, but I know it started after he came back from the TVA. It was like the last part of his life. Dick Eastman, whose son just passed away, he used to say he was one of the first board members of Community Solutions and called Community Service Inc. then. He said Arthur Morgan would get people on the board because he wanted to teach them about community. And I think that was, you know, he was, the end of his life really was focused on community and how can he share that.
Well, I think what I'd like to do is like close with something about the anniversary. Mm-hmm. And do you have things planned to commemorate it and that sort of thing?
Well, this year, 2015, is the 75th anniversary of when Arthur Morgan started Community Service Inc. Now we call Arthur Morgan Institute for Community Solutions. And, you know, he was the director and then our father and our mother then, and then Mary Ann McQueen, who then moved on to Home Inc. So it's had a long history of a lot of work. It was where the organization that founded and the intentional community movement, that was the hub, was Yellow Springs, which is now thousands of, you know, communities internationally, not just nationally. And then about 13 years ago, my husband, Pat Murphy, took over, and we began running the organization and really focused it on what individuals can do to address peak oil and climate change and reduce their energy use. And that's really the goal, being to empower people. So we will be planning all sorts of things this year. We haven't thought of all the different things we will do, but we will really want to celebrate this last 75 years, what we've accomplished, and what we hope to be helping bring into the years ahead.
Great. So, Bob, tell me how your curiosity is satisfied at this point. Is it? Do you have more questions? Are there things that you'd like to explore now?
I really want to find out more of what he was writing about. I think it's still relevant. I think he was an original thinker, and I've always been interested in original thinking because it's so hard to actually be an original. I mean, the power of the crowd and the power of your community is very powerful, and it can also kind of hold you back for, you know, thinking of a new solution. I mean, the solution for Five Rivers was mostly at the time, it still is, to dam it all up and have a big reservoir back there. That was totally, it's totally original to say no dam, we're just going to have, and it kept, it. Today it would have been all silted up, it would have had this, you know, it wouldn't have been a good solution. And I just think the fearlessness to have original thought is kind of where we as a community need to go. And sometimes we kind of look back to hold it so tight in town that we're very reactive. But I don't really think he was a very reactive person. I think he was thinking all the time, and it informed action steps, whether it's I want all the Antioch kids to be able to have work experience, and so we're going to start this cooperative thing, which is now every engineering school does. The cooperative system, to how he managed the TVA crews, you know, thousands and thousands of people. I don't know. That's very singular. So some of the stuff he was saying, I'm kind of interested I kind of wish he was around so you could just sit and listen to his stories like you guys were able to. So I love to do that with my grandparents, and they were just a different generation. And he's a little bit older than my grandparents, I think. So it's kind of listening farther back even than what informed my grandparents. So it's very cool.
Bob, I think you really said it correctly there. I think one of the things that I see is a challenge for the organization is, you know, can it continue to carry on original thinking and thinking outside of the box and not being limited and being flexible in this time of need. And that's we brought in a new executive director, and here we have, so we have a new executive director, myself and my husband, and we're all sort of working on how we can do that. And I think that's going to be, I really appreciate what you said, because I think that is what's needed.
Oh, that's good.
Great. I want to thank you, all three of you, for taking time out of your rainy Saturday to join me.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.